how can you learn about democracy when you're in a school environment that is coercive, where you have no say as to, in many cases, whether you even go or not? You don't have any say in what you're going to learn, or when you can go to the bathroom, or when you can switch from studying math to studying grammar.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
I'm Wendy Priestnitz, and I've been called everything from the grandmother of homeschooling in Canada to a lot of other nasty things by various people about the promotion I've done over the years about self-directed learning. Written a couple of books on the subject. The first one, School Free, was back in the 80s, and it was the first Canadian book on how to keep your kids out of school. Our own kids were learning at home back in the 70s when it was fairly lonely. There weren't too many other people that were doing home-based learning in Canada or probably in anywhere in those days. And so we needed some support and to connect up with other people. So in 1979, I started something called the Canadian Alliance of Homeschoolers, which was the first support group of any sort in Canada. It was national. It doesn't function anymore because there's so many local groups and provincial groups and so on, and we helped many of those provincial groups start up in the early 80s. So I guess I've seen the movement grow and develop and change over the years, so I've got that perspective, and we kind of put that all together a couple of years ago in starting a magazine called Life Learning Magazine, which focuses on helping kids learn, not the mechanics of being at home, not the legalities or the politics of it.
I just wanted to know how you came to the whole idea of unschooling, of life learning, of... Because you know, you're a pioneer.
I went to teacher's college and spent 4 months teaching. I was 19 at the time. I went to teacher's college when I was 18. That was back in the 60s when teacher education was just a one-year course right out of high school. And again, being a product of the 50s and 60s, I had no really career focus. You could either be a nurse or a teacher. Or maybe an airline stewardess if you really were aiming high. And so I went to teacher's college because I didn't like the sight of blood. And I found when I got into the class, I did really well in school myself, did really well in teacher's college. But when I got into the classroom, I was overwhelmed and I was also appalled. I was spending most of my time shouting at the kids, trying to keep them from jumping out of the windows and swinging from the lights. And one day it just hit me and I said, I don't want to be here, and neither do they. And why? What is this all about? Why do we do this to kids? There's got to be a better way of educating ourselves. And so I quit teaching as of Christmas of that first year. Got married young, started to have a family young, and started to watch these two daughters of ours who are about 18 months apart in age learning to walk and talk and do other wonderful things, and I thought, you know, they're burning to learn. There's a curiosity there that those two people have that somehow those kids that I was trying to teach, I thought, in school didn't have. So I started to read and think and look at that whole thing, probably things I should have done when I was in teacher's college and wasn't really encouraged, reading Maria Montessori and Yvonne Illich and those sorts of people, and later John Holt, some of his early books. It made so much sense. And so my husband and I basically said, hey, let's not send our kids to school right away. We'll just do it a year at a time and I don't think the plan was much greater than that. We started a business, our publishing business, started our first magazine in order to both be at home with them, because we knew it was a life journey, a lifestyle, rather than a teaching style or an educational method. And it just kind of developed from there. School authorities, back in those days, they tended to think that they had something to say about whether we could do this or not. We did a lot of educating about, educating the educators about the legality of homeschooling and about the style of learning that we'd chosen and so on. And yeah, it was hard. I've never been one to keep my mouth shut. I mean, you know, once I started the Canadian Alliance of Homeschoolers, that got its first kick by me being on CBC Morningside with Peter Zosky. And so, you know, all of a sudden we had thousands of letters from across Canada from curious people, and we also had school board folks knocking on our door. And I remember having being on another interview with a woman named Betty Stevenson, who back in those days was the provincial education minister, debating this, and 2 hours later, school board knocking on the door. But, you know, we just dealt with it at the time, talked to them, were very clear about what they could do and what they couldn't do. Fortunately, we knew more about the law than they did, so we were able to deal with it.
And the proof is in the pudding, right? I mean, your children...
Yeah, my children, who are now 30 and 32. The eldest is a novelist. She's got her third book published last fall by a Toronto publisher, and it's up for a Maritime Book Award. She lives in Nova Scotia. She also has a business on the side. They're both very entrepreneurial. Mm-hmm. Heidi, the eldest one, does run her own business, and that's how she makes her living. The youngest one, her sister Melanie, has a job, but she's very entrepreneurial in her job, and I think that's a combination of growing up in a business and also just that idea of learning how to, being allowed to continue to think for yourself and have that whole range of things that allow for flexibility and self-reliance. I think those two things have stood them very well and as they've grown older and developed careers and lives of their own. Our first magazine that we started publishing back in order to help the kids learn at home is called Natural Life, and so it's an environmental title, covers a whole range of lifestyle things, but the focus of it is environmentally sound, sustainable living. And so over the years, I have had a bit of a profile in that community in terms of journalism and so on. And in the mid-90s, I was invited to run as leader for the position of leader of the Green Party of Canada, which I did, and I won. And I very quickly became disillusioned with that because I realized that many of the people there didn't understand what democracy was really all about. And I thought of anybody that, you know, the Greens were sort of grassroots, let's start from the bottom and build something up. But many of them wanted to start from the top down. And that surprised me and disappointed me, but it brought me back full circle again to the fact that where we start is in the family, and then most kids go into a school environment. And how can you learn about democracy when you're in a school environment that is coercive, where you have no say as to, in many cases, whether you even go or not, because most people don't understand that it's not compulsory if you're learning at home. You don't have any say in what you're going to learn or when you can go to the bathroom or when you can switch from studying math to studying grammar and so on. And so I thought, you know, that's kind of back where I started with realizing that we have to learn how to work together as a society. We've created a mess for ourselves in many ways, economically and socially and so on, environmentally, in this world. And we've done it fairly quickly within a few hundred years. And so, okay, you know, let's look at what are the root causes of that, and let's look at how we can change that. And so for me, I'm back to saying, okay, how we bring up our kids, whether we do it in an attachment kind of way or whether we push them away early and whether we help them grow and learn how to make decisions and become independent, curious thinkers or remain the curious thinkers that they are when they're born. Those things really impact on the kind of world that we create. And so if those of us who want to change that have to look at what we do with our kids at the very beginning. I often get criticized, especially in the soundbite kind of media interviews that, that I often do. Well, okay, you know, this is utopia. This may be fine for a small elite number of people, but we need a school system. We need a place to put kids every day. And to me, that's sort of the crux of it. We need to make changes in a whole bunch of different aspects of society in order for kids to be able to learn independently. And we've got a few small democratic schools here, the Sudbury Valley schools and, you know, the Summerhill in England and that sort of thing. But again, they're still isolated examples in a way that, that home-based learning is an isolated example to some degree of something that I hope would be possible for us to embrace on a bigger scale. But we have to change how we look at workplaces and whether kids are welcome there. Mm-hmm. We have to look at our attitudes towards production. Of course, kids get in the way of being efficient in the workplace, that sort of thing. So we have to look at a whole bunch of different areas and how we look at our whole, how we run our society in order for those things to happen. So, yeah, it's not a simple A to B kind of straight line path, but from my perspective, we're spending billions and throwing more and more money at education all the time. We're throwing it at schools. We're tinkering. We're saying, okay, big class sizes, small class sizes, 20 kids versus 30 kids, computers, no computers, whole language versus phonics. We're tinkering with that thing and spending a huge amount of money doing it. And a lot of that's going to a bureaucracy and an industry that has a lot of its self-fulfilling kind of, you know, has its own vested interest in order to keep going. So there's a lot of barriers there. But I think every family for whom the light bulb goes on and says, okay, I've got to do this with my kids. I've got to allow this to happen. I've got to facilitate this for my kids. Everybody who sets up a democratic type of free school, everybody who fights to take their kid to school or to breastfeed in the mall or whatever it might be, we're moving there. I guess I've been in the business of publishing an environmental magazine long enough to know that there is change. I mean, you know, the whole concept, for instance, of natural food was pretty bizarre back in the mid-70s when we started talking about it. People just didn't know what that meant. So change happens, but it happens slowly.
Roll call! Come along now, you'll be late for parade! Pip, pip! Big car! Left, come on, smarten up!
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
Wake up.
talk about your own community.
We've always seen community as being a much broader thing without geographic boundaries in most cases, because we did move a lot for a whole variety of reasons when our kids were younger. So community was the people that we could find. For instance, Heidi, our eldest daughter, when she was 8, started a newsletter for other home-educated kids, and that was part of one of her communities, and it was kids across Canada, because there weren't very many in those days that were in her local neighborhood geographic community. So I think, you know, you have many different communities. There are communities of interest, and certainly now with the internet, it's easier to connect up with people that perhaps aren't close to you geographically. One of the wonderful things now that home education movement has expanded in numbers and credibility is that there are people within local areas where, you know, you can identify a community of like-minded people who think in the same way about kids and about learning. Wasn't around when our kids were little, certainly, and that was a shame. It would have been much better if it had have been. And I think what's happening now is we're seeing a real change, and it's probably part of the maturation process of the home education movement, that we're looking at community-based learning in a lot of cases. We're looking at families who used to maybe in the early days get together, and we tried to do that. We drove a lot in order to do that, in order to find those people, but just got together and realized, oh, there's other people that are thinking the way we are. Then it became, I know something about this subject, so I'm going to sit here and talk about it, and then a few kids come and get interested, and so we're sharing information. One of the kids knows a lot about something and shares it with everybody else. So then you start to develop a learning community, people just talking together about things that are important to them and learning from each other, variety of ages and backgrounds and so on. And to me, that's much preferable, much better than school situations where everybody is of the same age and background pretty much, and then you've got this one person sitting up high who's supposedly knowing everything about it and sharing everything about it and is much older in terms of age. So, you know, you get these learning communities started in a lot of these, what started out to be, quote, support groups for home-based education. And we're seeing now that formalizing in some areas where people are actually saying, oh, let's meet on a certain time, certain week, do a certain specific set of things, whether it be swimming or a learning experience that's a little more formal or whatever. And sometimes, and it's happening more and more in the States, which tends to morph into Canada at some point, that these people are actually getting spaces to use where they can lease something, organize themselves as a cooperative in legal terms, and lease some space from the community or an extra room in the library or community center, or an old house that's not being used and that they can fix up, that sort of thing. And then they're having a drop-in center kind of thing. It'll be interesting for me to see whether these actually end up turning into schools. I have a bit of a reservation about that people then get so organized, and you've always got some people in the same way that you have some families, some parents in homeschooling families who like to play teacher. You have some people who just have a greater need for organization than others. And I wonder if they will just become part of the problem at some point rather than part of the solution. But I think, you know, we are community animals. We want to interact with other people, and we need other people. And, you know, that saying that it takes a village to raise a child is so true. And certainly in this style of learning, I think if families can go out into their community and coerce the schools to keep themselves open at different hours for people in the community to use, go out and use libraries in that way or whatever. Unfortunately, we've got it all backwards. We could cut funding for those. But I think, you know, this is a group of people that we're talking about here that are on the forefront of that sort of thing. It'd be wonderful if more people would go out and try and convince the powers that be in their communities to use those spaces in better ways. For me, the real learning is real life, being part of something in your community kind of learning. And an example from my own kids, when we'd finally settled down and stopped moving around so much, I think Heidi was about 11 or 12, and it was the 40th anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So this was back in early 80s, sometime. We were kind of a bit activist. It was in the cruise missile days. We were protesting the American testing of cruise missiles in Canada. And so Heidi was aware of these subjects, and she got her hands on the book, Sadako and the Thousand Paper Cranes. And she had decided that she was going to write a play. She was a, you know, she's always been a writer. She's been, I think, a writer coming out of the womb. And so she adapted this book into a play, got a bunch of other kids together, all of which, except for her sister, were school attendees. And they put on this play. They workshopped it. It was over the summer. I think that happens in the beginning of August. So this was over the summer, and they workshopped this thing. They got a parent, not me, they got another parent to kind of be their mentor. They wanted to put this on for the community, perform this play on the 40th anniversary day. So they needed a space, and Heidi went to the library, and they kind of poo-pooed her and patted her on the head and said, "Yes, dear, fine, go away. We don't have any space." So they got this other mom who went and with Heidi and did some advocacy. And so they got the room organized and so on. But the kids organized this all for themselves. And then they decided, hey, we need to have people come. We need an audience. So how do we get an audience? Well, we put out some flyers. Gee, maybe we should, because, of course, I'm in the media, maybe we should put out some press releases. And so they wrote some press releases and got them out there. Well, they had 6 minutes on the CBC National News that evening because this was, you know, the kind of story that they were looking for. And a huge impact. They got that message out there in a wonderful way. And it was totally of their doing. It was real life. And obviously the learning that went on for all of the kids was huge. That, I think, partly came about because of the community activity. No matter what community we lived in, we would be part of the food co-op or, you know, we'd go out to a Fight City Hall meeting or whatever it might be with the issues. We, as adults, were engaged in that. And so they, from the time they were very little, were coming along. You know, as they got older, that it was just part of life. To them, being engaged in your community and the life of your community and the life of the world was just something that people did. So in that sense, it wasn't a big leap for them to start taking those things on on their own. But to me, that's what education's about. Yeah, they learned a lot about reading and writing and speaking and talking to the public. And I don't know, maybe they learned some geography about where Japan is and you know, a whole bunch of things that weren't segmented into subjects. They were there and they were part of their life. And you know, I can't imagine that process that Heidi and Melanie did for that anniversary. I can't imagine the impetus having come from any of those other kids in that group who were school attendees, even though they were all, you know, quite bright, engaged kids. They just didn't think in those terms of being able to do something quite that audacious.
Full of them. Chores.
chores, 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 chores. Grandpa worked hard in those first days when he married Grandma, and every day thereafter, 'cause he was crazy about her. Took her everywhere that flowers grew. Put in a sprinkler system, and only he knew how to run it. He erected a dinner bell and rang it as well. Now he's hanging in the shade, enjoying this last leg of his earthly life, learning to rest. Soon he'll fly, learn to rest. Soon he'll fly from his chores.
How do you like school, Billy?
Close.
Radio Free School. A show by, for, and about home learning.
Wonderful audience.
Ouch! Right, yeah.
The end.
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.